Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Primarily a rash, and the chances of dying from it is very low, but it's not zero.
Health officials announce Alaska's first case of monkeypox. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 29th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, as countries around the world look to alternatives to Russian oil, could Alaska be a source of liquefied natural gas?
The best way I can describe it is every planet possible that we can think of is aligned right now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Alaska has recorded its first case of monkeypox. State and city health officials announced the infection in a statement this morning. Anchorage Health Department officials say the person who tested positive is an Anchorage resident and is isolating at home. They say the person did not require hospitalization and was a close contact of a person who recently traveled out of state. Anchorage Medical Officer Dr. Brian Pitts says the disease is spread through close contact.
So you have to have prolonged skin-to-skin contact or contact with clothing or bedding that a person with the disease has been in contact with.
Monkeypox has been circulating globally, and the World Health Organization declared the outbreak a public health emergency last weekend. By Thursday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had recorded roughly 4,900 cases across nearly every state. Pitts says monkeypox produces fever, muscle aches, and chills, and can lead to a rash resembling pus-filled blisters.
It's primarily a rash, and the chances of dying from it is very low, but it's not zero.
The rash typically lasts about a month. There is currently a vaccine for monkeypox, but Pitts says there's a limited supply in the city and state.
Here at the Anchorage Health Department, we have 18 doses.
Vaccines will be prioritized for people who are in close contact with a positive monkeypox case. Vaccines are not recommended for the general public, health officials say. While anyone can contract or spread monkeypox, officials say most cases have occurred among gay and bisexual men. If you have symptoms or a known exposure to monkeypox, Pitts says it's important to reach out to a healthcare provider immediately and isolate yourself from others. Global markets unsettled by the war in Ukraine have bumped up gas prices and disrupted energy supply chains in the U.S. and abroad. Boosters of the long-sought Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project say those same factors make it the perfect time to invest in their plan to build the $39 billion project. But they're not the only ones trying to seize the opportunity, and analysts say stiff competition could continue to keep Alaska's North Slope gas in the ground. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
For decades, Alaska was Japan's sole supplier of liquefied natural gas, a transportable version of the substance used to heat homes and electrify power plants. Those exports stopped when competition from other producers edged Alaska out of the picture. But this month, Brad Chastain told an audience in Kenai that Japan is once again interested in importing natural gas from Alaska, and that his project is the best way to get it there.
And the best way I can describe it is every planet possible that we can think of is aligned right now.
Chastain manages the Alaska LNG project, which would construct an 800-foot pipeline to send North Slope natural gas to Nikiski, where it would be liquefied, shipped out, and sold. It's been on the table for as long as Alaska's been an energy state, though the steep costs of constructing the pipeline have been too prohibitive to make it a reality so far. That was before global demand for LNG shot up. Today, overseas buyers are desperate for gas as they look to move away from their dependence on Russia. which has historically supplied some European countries with as much as half of their supply. Russia, in turn, is responding to the opposition by cutting off its natural gas flow to Europe.
And so what's happening is that Europe is sucking up all available LNG, and everyone is paying the price.
Ben Cahill is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. He says natural gas prices in Europe rose last summer, before Russia invaded Ukraine. But the war has supercharged that crisis. He says LNG project developers are noticing, and like Alaska LNG, are trying to push their projects to the finish line while the timing seems right.
There are a lot of proposed LNG projects. There's no way that they can all move forward.
He says to get projects financed, producers first have to convince buyers they have long-term supply and that their project rises above the others, which he says mostly comes down to cost. The high project cost has stymied the Alaska plan in the past. Cahill says he still sees that as a big hurdle. Larry Persily says that hurdle is simply too large to overlook. Persily was previously tasked with getting an Alaska gas line built under President Barack Obama. And he says with all the competition, there's no way Alaska LNG will come out on top.
The cost and the risk and the fact that there are a lot more projects out there that are less risky and a lot cheaper than ours.
Many of the new proposed gas projects are on the country's Gulf Coast, which is the top exporter of LNG worldwide. Gas and the cost of shipping it out are generally cheaper there. Plus, Persily says he's skeptical that buyers overseas will want to sign long-term contracts with gas companies anyway, as renewable energy picks up steam.
And that move has been accelerated by the high cost of oil and gas.
Industry analyst Jason Fear says it's true the Gulf Coast is better positioned to deliver gas to Europe. But he says Alaska has at least one advantage over its competitors, its proximity to Asia.
So I think that sort of dynamic where you may see Gulf Coast LNG being pulled to Europe may create opportunities for projects on the West Coast. So I think that's a very interesting dynamic.
He says demand for gas in Asia is high too, and he doesn't see it dropping anytime soon. This spring, Governor Mike Dunleavy visited Japan to talk up the plan. Fear says Japan has, for years, been the world's biggest importer of LNG.
So those are, you know, hugely significant markets, you know, that are accounting for the bulk or very significant shares of global LNG.
That demand in Asia and elsewhere is already driving a slate of natural gas projects toward development. Cahill says there's been an uptick in signed contracts in recent months as buyers look to secure their energy futures. But even if the planets are aligning, like Chastain says, there's still just no guarantee one of those contracts will be inked in Alaska. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Governor Mike Dunleavy signed a bill yesterday that lets tribes apply to create state tribal compact schools. The bill creates a pilot program for Alaska Native tribes to run their own public schools with their own K-12 curriculum. Tribes can currently apply to create charter schools, but those are connected to a large local school district. State tribal compacts would allow tribes to operate much like the school districts. At a bill signing ceremony at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage, Dunleavy said compact agreements between the state and tribes could help improve education outcomes, expand school choice, and respect Alaska Native culture. Dunleavy also signed a bill requiring the state of Alaska to formally recognize its 229 federally recognized tribes. The legislation won't legally change the way the state engages with tribal leaders, but Bethel Democratic Representative Tiffany Zolkowski called it, quote, an important first step toward healing and recognizing our past. Coming up, ranchers in your delta look for answers after the disappearance of two cows and the death of another.
Meat groceries are pretty doggone high, and you're probably going to see more instances of something like this.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
A new Alaska Native charter school for students in kindergarten through 12th grade will open this fall in Wasilla with nearly 200 students. As Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports, the K'nik tribe hopes to combine cultural education with rigorous academics.
The Kinnick tribe has spent the last 3 years planning the school with the help of a federal grant. In December 2021, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District approved a 10-year charter for the Kinnick Cultural Charter School. Esther Shade is the school's assistant project director. She says anticipation in the community has been building.
We have heard a lot of things like, this has been a long time coming. We are excited. I wish this was open when I was in school. I'm still getting phone calls at least every day saying, you know, they're just excited.
Shade and other Kinnick tribal employees conducted surveys among Alaska Native families in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
They want more cultural activities in the classroom with high academic expectations. And, you know, there is a way that you can teach both cultural values with high academics.
They also wanted a K-12 school, so siblings in different grades could be at the same location during the school day. Project director Carl Shambly says that sets them apart from other new charter schools.
A lot of charter schools start with a K-3 program, and then a year later, they'll add a fourth and fifth grade. And then 2 years later, they'll add middle school. It was important early on. It was clear from the stakeholders that they wanted this K-12 thing to start up right away, because that was really how you build a community.
The Kinnick Cultural Charter School will offer in-person learning, a homeschool program, and a blended option. Across the three programs, 192 students are pre-enrolled for the school year. They plan to accommodate between 275 and 300 students for in-person learning, and up to 300 in the homeschool program. Students will learn traditional skills throughout the year, from berry picking in September to hunting on sea ice in March. Classes will follow the Matsu Borough School District's curriculum and state graduation requirements. Over the next 2 weeks, staff will assemble 19 portable buildings donated to the school by the Anchorage School District. Shambly says the Kinnick tribe has a building with a commercial kitchen already on the property, which they'll use to provide hot meals in partnership with the Matsu Borough School District.
There's multiple charter schools here in the valley. This will be the only one which will provide hot lunches and breakfasts through the school district's nutritional services program. That's a barrier for other families to attend charter schools.
Another barrier they want to address is transportation. That's still in the planning stages, but eventually they'd like to have two buses meeting students at pickup spots at either end of the borough. The school will also have a before and after school STEM program and other childcare available to families. Shambly says offering an Alaska Native cultural education in the borough is important. He previously worked in Kotzebue as a teacher and principal, and he wants Kinnick Cultural Charter School to support families who've moved from rural Alaska to the Matsu.
All different groups across the state are represented here in the valley. The school district has doubled in 15 years. It's the fastest growing school district in the state. And so right along with that is the Alaska Native American Indian population that's also growing. So, you know, we're hoping to create a little community within the community.
The tribe will host an informational meeting on August 11th for families interested in learning more about the school. They can register for the school year through the Matsu Borough School District website at matsuk12.us. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Longtime Alaska journalist, author, and historian Lael Morgan has died at age 86. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Morgan led an unconventional life, telling the stories of others and creating her own.
Lael Morgan's adopted daughter, Diana Campbell of Fairbanks, says Morgan came to Alaska from New England with her husband in 1959 to earn money to sail around the world, an adventure she half completed before returning to Alaska and embarking on a journalism career that took her around the state and beyond.
The Chino Empire, the News Miner, Justin's Weekly, the Los Angeles Times, and then the Tundra Times, which was probably one of her most important things.
Morgan's work at the Tundra Times gave her insight into Alaska Native people's many fights to protect their way of life.
She really had a front row seat to land claims. The Tundra Times covered land claims, and they also covered the Rampart Dam Project, plus Project Chariot.
Morgan wrote a book, Art and Eskimo Power, about Carver and Tundra Times founder Howard Rock. The book and many others, including an acclaimed history of Gold Rush-era prostitution, Good Time Girls of the Alaska-Yukon Gold Rush, were published by Epicenter Press, a company Morgan co-founded in 1988. Morgan's many other pursuits included freelance photography and writing for publications like the New York Times and National Geographic, a stint as a private detective in Los Angeles, and retracing Jack London's travels in the South Pacific.
She was nomadic in that way, and she wasn't afraid of adventure. She wouldn't say she was a woman's liberator, but she didn't think being a woman held her back from anything. She was always working, also. I mean, she never retired.
Another Morgan project brought attention to the buried history of African-American soldiers who built the Alaska Highway. Here's Morgan talking about it in a 2017 KUAC interview.
We had two reunions of Alaska Elkhorn veterans, and they had personal photos, and we got their personal photos. We made a museum show and took it all around. And then Colin Powell took it to the Pentagon.
Morgan pushed for the history to be taught in Alaska schools. Campbell says she first met Morgan when she had her as a journalism instructor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and was initially intimidated by Morgan's no-nonsense style.
She scared the dickens out of me.
But they eventually formed a bond.
Native people were important to her. Of course, I'm Alaska Native myself, and she wanted to see an Alaska Native do well in journalism.
Campbell says the connection deepened, and Morgan, who had no children of her own, informally adopted her.
She said, "I'm going to be your mother." And I said, "Okay."
Campbell underscores that Morgan was not all about work.
She also collected people, oddball people, and would sometimes see things in other people that other people did not see.
A memorial service for Lael Morgan is being planned for Anchorage around Labor Day, but Campbell says Morgan's ashes will be buried at Fairbanks Birchill Cemetery.
She's actually going to be buried next to Georgia Lee, a woman she found out about through her book, Good Time Girls. Georgia Lee was maybe Fairbanks's most famous good time girl.
Lael Morgan's burial will be followed by a celebration of life event. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Broth.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Alaska State Troopers are investigating the killing and mutilation of a cow near Delta Junction. And the rancher who owned the animal is offering a $2,500 reward for information about its death and the disappearance of two other cows over the past week. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Tangie Bates and her husband Matt own 300 head of cattle, and because there's not enough pasture at their ranch, they keep most of their beef cows at other farmers' fields. But all that changed this week when kids next door to one of those farmers found a dead cow.
And it was a couple of little 8-year-old girls that found it. They were out playing.
Tangie Bates says the girls found the cow Wednesday in the woods that surround the field, where she and her husband kept about 100 of their cows. She said last week they'd found the carcasses of two other cows that had gone missing, and they weren't sure of their cause of death either. But the third cow, a lactating female, had clearly been killed and mutilated.
They had cut her ears off, cut her udder off, out her reproduction organs, cut her eyes out, cut the back straps out.
Bates says it appears the cow died within the past 5 days or so. She says some people have suggested it was killed by a predator, like a bear, but she disagrees because the incisions clearly were made with a sharp edge.
We have a butcher shop. We know the difference.
Bates and her husband have been operating their ranch and farm in Delta for about 6 years, and she's never heard about any cattle mutilations in the area during that time. Nor has Scott Mugridge, another Delta rancher who's also president of the Alaska Farm Bureau.
I haven't ran into such a thing.
Mugridge says he also is perplexed by the cow killing, but he says the fact that someone cut out the back straps, those two long strips of meat that run alongside the spine, leads him to suspect the cows were killed for food by someone who can't afford to buy it at a grocery store.
Meat groceries are getting pretty doggone high, and you're probably going to see more instances of something like this.
But the high cost of beef also means that Bates and her husband will have to pay some $2,500 to replace each cow. And that doesn't include the loss of revenue they would have gotten from the sale of calves the cows would have produced.
The short-term value is, you know, $2,500. But the long-term value of that animal is, you know, I'm losing out on thousands of dollars.
Troopers are investigating the cow killing, and that's about all a spokesperson could say about it Wednesday afternoon. Bates says she and her husband have sent tissue samples from the three cows to a lab in Washington State for necropsy in hopes that might shed some light on the case. But she, too, has her suspicions based on what she's encountered during a lifetime of ranching.
I originally come from Idaho, and we've seen this before where you have colts that have come through and, you know, do cattle mutilations and taking reproductive organs, eyeballs.
Bates says she's just speculating about that. Meanwhile, she and her husband have been spreading the word around the local agricultural community about the suspected cattle killings, and fellow farmers and ranchers have been donating money for a $2,500 reward the Bateses are offering for information leading to the conviction of the suspected rustlers. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
France's ambassador to the United States is in Alaska with a stop in Anchorage before flying to the village of Quinnahoc to visit the museum there, which is led by a French archaeologist. It's Ambassador Philippe Etienne's first trip to the state, and on his first day in Anchorage, he had not yet seen any of the city's charismatic megafauna. But Etienne has been meeting with state and local leaders and the local French community. Etienne says he's been discussing everything from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, his diplomatic post in Russia when the Soviet Union collapsed, and, of course, climate change.
Well, we all feel it very acutely. I mean, on all continents, we had just in Europe two heat waves already this summer. And we are also affected by drought, by fires, wildfires, like the United States, but like many, many other parts of the world. So it's really important for all of us in the world reaching our goals, limiting the global warming. It's really important to have the U.S. on board. It was good for us to have the U.S. back to the Paris Climate Accords. And also the U.S. As a leader in this global negotiation.
Kind of changing gears, I had seen on your itinerary that you're heading to the village of Quinnahoc. And maybe you could tell me about that. Why are you heading out there?
Yes, indeed. After Anchorage, we will visit with my colleagues Quinnahoc because we have there a cooperation between the local community and a French archaeologue, which is being supported by our government. This cooperation is about excavations in the region, in the old village, Nunalek. It's really important because it's about finding objects, artifacts, which would disappear if they are not looked for because of the global warming, because the permafrost is now unfrozen and the objects which have been kept under the previous conditions cannot be kept anymore.
What are you expecting? I mean, have you seen pictures? Do you know?
Yeah, I've seen some pictures, the result of the investigations, the artifacts which have been founded. And I must say, this morning we were also very lucky because we could visit both the here in Anchorage, the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and the Anchorage Museum. And I learned quite a lot this morning visiting those two places.
Yeah, that's great. We have a nice museum here, don't we?
Yeah, a very. You can be proud of your museum. It's really a great museum.
My wife drags me there on occasion. She's also the one that helps me with the French words and the crossword puzzle. So
okay. I thank her. Yeah,
I do too, all the time. I should ask you about Russia. And I know that's a broad question, but As a diplomat, do you feel like there's any hope that diplomacy will help resolve the situation in Ukraine? And I say that sitting here in Alaska, where we are close to the other side of Russia, right? What do you think about that?
We, especially our president, we tried very much to prevent this war, this invasion by Russia. Maybe you remember President Macron traveled to Moscow some days before to try to convince the Russian president that there was a negotiation which was possible, because we all need to rethink the security order in Europe. Once Russia has started this very brutal invasion of Ukraine, and while France had the presidency of the Council of the European Union, so had the responsibility for the direction of the whole of the European Union, we were very clear in our and determined in our support of Ukraine. But to come back to your initial question, of course, we want to resolve these issues with diplomacy. We have always been saying this. It is the reason why also our president kept in touch with not only with the Ukrainian president all the time, but also with the Russian president. For the time being, we see the war going on with many losses, many human losses, and even crimes, war crimes. So we have to, we cannot accept this. We continue to support the Ukrainian people in their courageous fight against this aggression.
You mentioned that you had held a post in Moscow about 30 years ago, and I was trying to do the math if that was just before the collapse of the Soviet Union or just...
At the time of the end of the Soviet Union.
Okay,
I was there exactly at that time.
Yeah. What was that like? I mean, to have seen that for yourself?
Well, it was history in the making. And of course, it was not easy for the Russian people. And we must understand that. But it was also a period of freedom for and opportunities for everybody, including the Russians. Also for countries in Central Europe and other countries from the previous Soviet Union. So a difficult time, a transition, a time of opportunities, but also of hope.
Yeah, it's interesting. So many of us just watched it on TV, you know, and I was just a boy. So it's interesting to meet someone that was there.
No, it was really impressive, yes, to be there at that time.
That was France's ambassador to the U.S., Philippe Etienne. For more information about the Nunalek Culture and Archaeology Center that Etienne is visiting in Quinnahock, check out nunalek.wordpress.com. That's nunalleq.wordpress.com. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Tim Ellis in Delta Junction. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.